Well, everyone, welcome to the Dot Matrix podcast. We've been a little bit away for holidays and Christmas and all. I'm Justin.
And I'm Sean.
And this is our podcast number 3, Year in Review 2007. And actually, it's really a good one. I'm pretty excited about this. And we've done this a little bit differently since Sean and I have written notes about what we want to talk about, and we haven't been trying. We've been unsuccessfully trying not to tell people what we're going to do.
Yes, we did wrote notes. Yes,
we did. Wrote notes. Did I say wrote notes?
We wrote notes. That's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. We haven't started drinking, but we will get to that after.
Look at the levels on that one.
I know.
But I'm looking forward to hearing this, because then we'll have our theme song right at the beginning, and it'll be awesome. The theme song's awesome, and I'm sure you all loved it at the beginning of this. How was your holiday, Sean?
Holiday was really good, Justin. Lots of food, lots of drink, eating too much. I think my stomach was actually telling me to stop.
Right.
Every night, it's been a new big meal. Family and friends... You saw you last night,
or yes,
the
yes.
Cookie exchange.
Yet my quick VIP appearance before my second engagement. It was too funny.
You were looking good, actually.
Oh, I thank you.
Nice pants.
Oh. Well, RW and Co. for all those who are interested.
I was going to ask you. Thank you. Maybe I can find the warehouse sale before it's too late.
And how was the cookie exchange?
Oh yeah,
everyone
it was
had
awesome.
Good cookies.
Yeah, it was great. There's Nanaimo bars, we had the cutout cookies, and Elaine's, they're basically like cranberry white chocolate chip cookies, and our other friend bought, they were actually peanut butter with a big chocolate chip in the middle, those ones. Those are great. And what was the other one? Gingerbread. The hosts, our friend Cheryl and Charles, they made gingerbread cookies. They're awesome.
Wow.
We actually all left with a lot of cookies.
That's a really great idea. I mean, for everyone out there in the world who doesn't know, who don't know us and don't know what we were just at, and two of our friends had a cookie exchange, and it was like a nice holiday, twist on the holiday thing, you know, like no gifts, but just everyone bakes some cookies and exchange them. That's a neat idea.
Yeah. I actually got some baking done this year, which I've always wanted to do, so.
Nice.
Yes, it was a lot of fun.
And I was at Bistro in West Forth in Vancouver, which is really nice, and I had the Brussels sprouts that Cheryl said would change my life, and they were very good.
Did they change your life?
They didn't change my life, but they were good. I had rabbit and brie pastry thing for starter, and it was it was just really nice. Like, it was... casual but smart and relaxing and just a good time.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah. But anyways, we didn't do podcast 3 just to talk about our holiday excitement and so forth.
Yeah.
It's our year in review.
It is. Our third episode, yet the year in review.
Yes, 2007 has ended. And Sean and I have prepared 2 lists. He has 1 list. I actually have 2 lists. But actually, before we get started, I did want to say a couple of things. I had a note. I have a couple of pages of notes here, not full pages. But I did wanted to mention that since we've launched our podcast, I have been getting a few emails. Not anything from our website. No one's posting. No one likes us. You know.
Wow. Not yet.
But people who I know have been listening, they've been responding back and. People like our social commentary kind of label. And then the marriage one seems... Our conversation about marriage on our first podcast seems to be getting responses. I like it.
And so this was someone that... These female emails came from people you know?
Yeah. I'm listening in and I just like hearing what you're up to. And also, I like... There's an interesting point about marriage and how a friend of mine who lives out in Europe was saying that she... had been, you know, living with her now husband for a number of years, and they just recently got married, and how they didn't think it was going to be a big difference at all. But actually, when you do that, like, she did find it. It changed a little bit about how they felt about what their status was or whatever.
Right.
And, I mean, not necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with anything said, but just how the topic of marriage brought up a lot of interesting thoughts.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of neat.
It's good to be thought-provoking. Right on.
That's the idea.
Good to hear.
And Actually, the one point I want to make, and it's just because it's about the holidays, and if I don't say it now, we'll never say it. This will be January or February, and then it'll be gone. But what I was at a meeting, and someone in this meeting was talking about the difference between, you know, when you say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays, right?
Okay, yeah.
And this person who, got very, and it doesn't really matter who it is, right? It's just the reaction was the thing that I thought was interesting.
Right.
He was recounting a story about how he was saying, he was wherever he was out and about, and someone said to him, Happy Holidays. And he said that he got very annoyed and said, no, it's Merry Christmas.
Wow.
And he got very insulted by the fact that someone said to him, Happy Holidays and not Merry Christmas.
But that's so neutral.
Well, and wow. That's what I thought. And I thought, and I know there's a whole, you know, war on Christmas things people talk about, right? And I just thought it was really fascinating because, when did being inclusive become offensive? You know, that was my question. I thought that was really interesting. Like,
yeah.
I understand that people who really love Christmas want people to tell them Merry Christmas. They want to say Merry Christmas to people. But if someone says to me Happy Holidays, I don't really find it offensive. Like, just because you want to be inclusive, everyone who's celebrating whatever they're celebrating, whether it's a big thing or a small thing.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was an interesting point. That, like,
that is interesting.
When did inclusiveness become offensive to some people?
I know.
You know?
And I think because Christmas is, for a certain amount of people, it means so much that if you do say anything else, they would get offended. I could almost see that. I don't get that, but I could see it. I recently actually just saw a group. I read an article about a group online and how there was an ad saying, have we gone too far? You know?
Right.
And I just read an article.
You're doing a lot of reading.
I have. I think I always mention that every podcast of another article I read, but as a school in Ottawa, actually, where you used to hang and work.
I used to live there as well.
With your hood. Anyway, and there's this, I hope I got all the details right, but I think it was like an elementary school, and they were singing Let It Snow,
right.
Or Winter Wonderland, whatever the one on that has the lyric on Christmas Day, or This Christmas Day, or whatever.
Oh, I can't
It's
remember.
One of those
okay.
two. And anyways, they had to change it to Festive Day, because a parent of one of the children, probably obviously not Christian, or any other groups that would celebrate Christmas, was seriously offended that this Christmas concert was going on and the kids were saying Christmas Day. So they changed it to Festive Day. And at first I thought, have we gone too far? But then I thought, well, actually Christmas, festive, is actually not a bad substitution.
Right.
It could have been worse.
Right.
So I thought, okay, well, that's inclusive, right? It's festive and that's the point. But I think if someone...
change it to This Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. This Tuesday. But I think if someone gets upset at you just trying to be nice and inclusive, I think there's maybe some larger issues, perhaps.
I think that's really fascinating. Like, it wasn't, like, the person wasn't mad at me because I didn't say anything, right? But he was just recounting a story. And I don't know when that he was offended by it, but he was definitely emotionally attached to the term, you know?
Like, on edge.
Yeah, on edge. I thought that was interesting, you know?
That is interesting.
But that's my one little observation. I have other things, but we could talk about those another time, but...
We will. We'll get back to that PC stuff.
Yeah. So, Sean created a list, and I created a list, and maybe you should tell them what your list is.
Okay.
And then I'll tell you what my list is, and then, or the listeners, what our lists are.
Yes.
And then we'll just go right into it.
Okay, cool,
okay.
Yeah.
So what's your list about?
My list, which was not easy to compile, but it's the top five Canadian albums of 2007, in my opinion.
Right. And when you mean released in 2007?
As a matter of fact. It's interesting to bring that up.
Oh, okay.
Because one of them wasn't recorded in around circa 2007.
Okay.
But yeah, that's my list.
Okay.
So we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Yours.
Well, and I couldn't create a list so specific because I am not as well knowledgeable about various topics as you are. So I had to do more broad list. And I just did a top five, as I wanted to be top five as you were doing a top five,
okay.
of just things in the cultural realm, whether or not it's an album, whether or not it could be a particular song, it could be an artist that I discovered, could be a painting, could be a TV show, could be a movie, or just a book or anything, you know?
Yeah, good.
So I put a list of five things together. Oh, whoops. anyways, yeah, quote unquote five things.
Awesome, awesome.
And we can just go from there.
Okay, do you want to start?
Why don't you start? I'm curious about your list because you've been waving this list at me.
And I almost told you before we started, but Elaine stopped me, so that was good.
So is your list in chronological order, or sorry, in priority order, like really a top five, like what's number one, or is it just any five? Okay.
Yes, very much so.
So why don't we go for five then, number
okay.
five?
Okay, let me grab my piece of paper here. Well, I'll start with five.
Okay,
I won't dwell on
So you do your five, I'll do my five. I don't really have an order, but you know, and we'll just work our way up to your number one.
Okay, well, the thing about number five was that it was actually someone I just included very recently, and that's Feist, The Reminder.
Oh, okay. I haven't really listened to it all the way.
Oh, yeah?
Because I discovered Feist a couple of years ago, before she got really big. Like,
right.
And actually, Tara and I were listening to one of her songs quite a bit, and then it became on the radio quite
like
a bit.
Like Mushroom Room and da-da-da.
Yeah, not that one. It was another one on that album, though.
On that one, okay.
Yeah, and we loved that song. We played it a lot, and then something became on the radio, and I was like, oh, again, ahead of the curve. I felt really proud.
That's good.
But I haven't heard too much of this album. So why is it on your list?
It's on my list because I've kind of gone back and forth with how I feel about Feist. I think she's amazing. As a musician, but I think, you know, do I tire of her voice or do I keep wanting to go with it? And I realize I really love her voice. I love how she kind of sings in that kind of semi-delicate way.
Yeah.
Because of her, she's had voice problems in the past that got her to this point. But,
oh, really?
Yeah. She used to rock really hard, actually, and I think she blew out her voice is what I've heard. I don't know all the details about that, but listening to it, I really dug it. I heard it all the way through a few times, and it just is. She deserves all the success she's getting, so.
Yeah.
That was my number five.
Good. So should I go for a five? Are you done with
Do you
your...
want to do it, like, yours, mine, yours,
I think
mine?
We should alternate.
Okay, let's do it, let's do it.
You know, actually, should we alternate?
No, that's a good idea. I never thought about that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say it's number five. And it's just because I saw it yesterday. I had to put it on. I saw the Christmas special of Extras. Have you seen that yet?
No.
Have you been watching Extras at all?
I don't watch it regularly.
Oh, and I mean, for those of you who don't know Extras, I mean, we were talking last time on our podcast about Ricky Gervais and his podcast. And Ricky Gervais is, you know, famous for The Office. And then his show after that was Extras, where he was pretty much this extra actor and this... His friend Maggie, who's also an extra in movies, and it's just their, you know, trials and tribulations of being movie extras.
Right.
Hilarious for two seasons, and then they did the Christmas special that just aired on HBO and BBC.
Is that part of a current season, or is it just a special?
Just the Christmas special, and then it's over. That's it. They're never doing it again. And it, because, I mean, you've seen some episodes of Extras,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've seen a few.
And it's just, you know, drop... on the floor, rolling on your ass, funny, right?
Yes,
just
yes.
And having stars out there and just making asses of themselves or whatever, like Orlando Bloom totally going after Maggie, you know, and you don't see it, right? And this one is not like that at all. It was funny, and there was funny parts, and I laughed a lot, and, you know, and I mean, I know enough about British television and British culture and entertainment that maybe I got like 60% of the references, and my sister, who's a real... British lover, she maybe gets 75, and even then, like, the 25 extra percent where, you know,
untouchable.
Someone untouchable, you have to live there, you have to know what's there, right?
Right?
And, like, you know, people will walk in, do a cameo, or the real estate agent showing Maggie apartments, he's probably someone famous that you have no idea, you know?
Right.
And, but it was interesting because, Clive Owen has an amazing cameo.
Cool.
Oh, the things he says, I couldn't believe you...
that he was saying
it. I mean, not the words, but the tone and the spirit of what he was saying. Wow. Oh my God, he was so funny.
That's cool.
And, but it was, the point was that, you know, his character, Ricky Gervais' character, Andy Millman, became famous because he wrote a sitcom and it became a hit in the BBC, but it's a really bad, like, you know... According to Jim type comedy.
Oh,
it's not like, you know, an office comedy kind of thing. So he was kind of sad and he was famous and he was rich, but he wasn't respected. And then, so this whole spiraling into sort of a celebrity complex that he had, and he didn't remember his roots, and then he discovered that he just wanted to be famous and rich. He didn't care about the integrity anymore. And
okay.
then he quits his show.
Yeah.
And then he ends up on Big Brother. The Celebrity Big Brother is what he ends up on. And the final, you know, maybe it's 15 minutes of him being on Celebrity Big Brother was some of the best writing and acting I've seen in him. Like, it's not
really
funny, but it's just pure. He's coming to this epiphany about celebrity, about who he is, and it's brilliant.
Huh.
I cried, actually, almost, like, you know me, I don't cry, but I cry, like, I could feel something
could
be.
Yeah, you were affected.
Yes.
Yeah, in other words.
it was pretty amazing. So
oh,
that's
great.
I thought that was pretty well, amazingly well done. It's on my top five,
okay.
Quote, unquote, five.
Well, that's great, because you know Elaine's a big fan of extras. And I think you and her have been keeping
mm-hmm.
up with that. I saw the Bowie episode.
She got me
oh,
into it, because she
so
she got me onto season one. And
okay.
That's when I finally...
So you kind of went from there.
Yeah, and I went from there and got season two.
Good,
yeah.
That's good.
So that's my number five.
That's your number five, and
yeah.
You're in no particular priority order,
no
is that right?
Particular priority order.
Alrighty then.
What's your number four?
My number four is one that came out a few months ago, I think. And it's Andorra by Caribou. You know Caribou?
Those are words that I have never heard of.
Okay. Yeah, those are two words, yeah. Caribou is a guy, he's kind of like this composer, really. I mean, he does it's kind of like pop, but it. It's like loops and all these kind of things. Like, it's rock, it's...
Right.
It's like all these different... It's like a mix and match of, like, a bunch of different styles that he just puts in these amazing pop songs.
Okay.
It's hard to describe, really, but it's just so much going on all the time coming in. It's almost like Tomorrow Never Knows, the Beatles, like, happening all the time today. This kind of thing.
Right.
And so he used to be called Manitoba, but then some previous band said, no, we were Manitoba, you can't be Manitoba. So he changed his name to Caribou. I think that's what happened. So his first album was actually released under Manitoba, and that was really amazing too. So,
So is it, when you mean composer, is it specifically instrumental, or is it...
It's very instrumental, but there's a lot more singing on this one.
Oh, there
one.
Is, okay.
Yeah.
And he does the singing?
I think it's him.
Okay.
I don't even know if it's him. I don't know if he brings people in, but it's the same guy. But he just has just some amazing ideas and all these crazy things happening in the songs. And sometimes you get some really, like, classic 60s, like, sounding guitars, and then all of a sudden it's just, you just hear all these, like, little bitty kind of sounds like that Bjork would do or something, and it's just all mixed together, so...
Okay.
I thought it was very creative and so different than so many other Canadian artists, so I really dig what he did.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it sounds like an album that you probably couldn't categorize in a genre. It sounds to
yeah.
me like he's ebb and flowing in a bunch of different styles.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of one of those indie darlings, I guess you could say.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like... He does his thing, he plays everywhere, like, he kind of goes around, and...
And you've sort of tracked, you've known him since his Manitoba days?
Yeah.
And you've tracked it, okay.
Because Elaine heard that first record, and I liked it, and then she found this one for us, so... Andorra, it's called, so... I thought that would be number four.
Nice!
Yeah, I don't know too much more about it, I don't know the names of all the songs, I just listen to it, it's like this constant... colorful palette, you know,
yeah,
in the
yeah.
ears, and when you see colors.
Yeah.
So, it's very colorful. I see a lot of colors when I listen to it, so.
Nice.
Yeah, that's my number four.
Wow. And for everyone listening, we will, on our site, thedotmatrix.com, we'll have
yes.
links to everything
of
we
course.
Talk about, because I think, if we're going to be raving about stuff, we want people to know where to get
we
them.
We want more people
whatever.
To hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
My number four is a painting, actually. It's a painting called The Kiss. It's a very famous painting by an Italian artist called Francesco Hayez, H-A-Y-E-Z, and it's Il Baccio, or whatever, however you say that, kiss in Italian. I could never say anything in Italian. I have to save my life. But in English, it's translated to The Kiss, and it's a, it's maybe classical painting or detailed, like not an impressionistic kind of thing,
sure.
but definitely I don't know anything about
like
it.
Like the old
except,
frescoes
yeah,
or whatever.
Exactly,
yeah.
Thank you. But it was in a museum in Milan, and it's one of the most famous ones there.
Cool.
And it's about this, I think he's sort of an aristocrat, and it's a staircase, and he's takes a woman in his arms and just gives her, is laying on a really big kiss on her, right? And, like, and they're sort of hidden in a sort of bottom of the staircase away from everyone kind of thing.
Okay.
And I thought it was pretty amazing because of that time and that style, most of the painting is, you know, it's after that period where all the altars and it's Jesus in two dimensions and Mary Magdalene and all the different Bible stories and the halos and everything,
right?
It's that next period.
Okay.
But still, it's mostly, you know, those pictures are about, you know, noblemen, you know, and sitting in their thrones and,
uh-huh.
you know, scenes in Venice or whatever. But I thought it was very unique to have a painting where about just... Actually, two people showing affection, which you rarely see. Usually, you know, someone's extending a hand out or someone's looking at someone. But, you know, there's not very much kissing in paintings in that.
That's
thing,
actually
right?
very true.
And it's like, and I think the story of the painting, and again, I should have done more research before I just wrote it down. But
that's part of it, right?
You just
write what you feel about
and
it.
And I remember because I would see the painting, and then I realized it was the famous one for the museum, and then I walked around, and I would come back to it like four or five times just to stand there and look at it.
It's amazing.
Because it was like this guy is probably of a different nobility than the woman, and he lays this kiss on her. At least that's my interpretation of what I chose to see in this
right.
painting.
Right.
And so it was like, you know... a triumph of love, so to speak, you know, where he's, you know, he shouldn't be falling in love with this woman or he shouldn't be showing affection in that way in such a public venue, but he's doing it anyways and it's being caught on, you know, a painting or on tape or on photo or whatever,
sure,
you know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
And stealing a moment kind of thing with the person
awesome.
He loves, you know? And I just thought that was pretty amazing message and imagery to be saying back in that time when it wasn't about that, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
they were all dressed up in their garb and, you know, flowing costumes and whatever.
Right.
And I thought that was really moving.
So, is it like a period piece but done recently, like painted recently?
Oh, no, it was of the time.
It was
at
of
the time.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Which what made it,
okay.
to me is what made it really powerful.
So that's how it stood
yeah.
out, because they're actually embracing in a way you don't usually see.
Yeah,
that. Oh,
and it
cool.
was of the time. And
right.
you're like, you never see that. I mean,
that's interesting. You
yeah.
don't. I don't think you, I can't even think of one
yeah.
where they actually do that. That's very cool.
So that was my number four.
That's great.
Yeah.
Justin, moved by a painting in 2007. That's awesome. Great. Okay, my number three, and when you talked about stuff released in 2007, this is
yes.
where
okay.
That made me think of this, is because it was released in 2007, earlier this year, but it was actually recorded in 1971, Neil Young live at Massey Hall.
Yes, this one I've heard of.
You've heard of it,
yeah,
okay.
I have not listened to too much of it, but I've heard buzz.
It is an amazing album, and
mm.
I think... part of why it's like, it's got so much heart is because it's just him with an acoustic guitar or a piano, an organ or something.
Oh, so it's just him, a solo?
Just him. It's like Evening With. And
oh, wow.
That's kind of why it's special to Elaine and I as well, because we saw Neil Young Evening With at Queenie probably almost 10 years ago now. So it brought back memories of that. And it was just one of the most amazing performances we've ever seen. Very intimate, and so when you hear these songs in 1971, he's playing, there are new songs that were going to come out on one of his most famous records, Harvest, right?
Right.
And when
right.
he says, this is a new song, it's weird to hear him at probably his mid-20s at the time saying, this is a new song, something we've heard over and over and over again. So, but not only that, the musicianship, you just get a real idea of how great of a guitar player he was and a singer, and how genuine his songs are, and what a great songwriter he was, or is still.
No worries.
Still making music, still alive and kicking. So I had to include it. I was going through lots of records, trying to find stuff that I own. Like, we own all of these,
right.
that I'm about to mention tonight. So I can't really talk about records that came out that I haven't obviously listened to, but this one we listened to at a great length, so... I just had to put it on the list because
nice.
It's just one of the year's best releases, no matter when it was recorded.
Nice.
Yeah.
Huh.
So powerful. Like, I think you like some Neil Young.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, everyone does.
Absolutely.
And I think I should get you a copy of it.
Cool.
I'll
yeah,
burn
yeah.
you a coffee. And we can talk about all that on another podcast episode.
Yeah, submitting to a felony right on the podcast. That's nice, Sean.
Yes. So yeah, that was my number three.
Okay, cool. This is where I have to merge two things. Actually, I'm gonna merge two later. But I'm gonna say one. And this is not a movie that was... This is a movie. And it wasn't one that was released this year. But it was a movie that you and I disagreed on. And I have to put this on. Because where I finally saw the light. And I know, I mean, I don't think you would think it's the most brilliant movie in the world.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
yeah.
it.
I know, I have to say this. And I don't think you'd ever put this on your top movie of all time list, mm-hmm. right? But you enjoyed it when we saw it together, one of our mandates. and
mandate, yes.
And I saw it with you, and yeah. I thought, this is, I don't get, like, it was not the best movie in the world. And I finally saw it, like, again this year when I was watching it, and I understood it. And it's Elizabethtown, which
yes.
I knew I was going to say. Because you like, and I thought I would like the movie too. It had, you know, Kirsten Dunst in it, and
yes.
I always think she's a great actress and,
yes.
And does what she does very well in movies. And Orlando Bloom, which I didn't really have anything pro or against, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, the writer director, what's his name again? Who wrote Cameron Crowe, right?
It is a Cameron Crowe,
yeah.
isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
And but I mean, the criticism that people said about it is it was just too much, and it was a bit misguided and stuff like that. But you really got to it, and what finally made me realize it this year
mm-hmm.
is that it's not like my criticism was that it should have been a road movie or
yeah.
a comedy, a romantic comedy, and not everything in a movie about a father and son. Like, they were three movies in one, right?
Yes.
I didn't understand why it had to be one movie. It should have been split into three.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, but that's the point.
Okay.
Right? And I don't know if this is why you thought the movie was good or not, but that's the point, because in life it's not about you have a relationship with your father, and that's one part of your life, and then you close that off, and then you have another part where you find the woman of your dreams under weird circumstances,
very,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And then the road trip piece, right?
Yeah.
Where you learn about yourself, you learn about the woman you love, and you learn about your father, you know, it all comes together. Like,
yeah.
Things happen all at once.
You can't
split it up. You can't, you know, deal with one thing in your life and then deal with another thing in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with everything together
mm-hmm.
because you can't choose when timing is. You can't, when timing happens, you can't choose, you know, it may not be the best of circumstances to meet the woman of your dreams when you're trying to bury your father,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I suddenly got it, you know?
Well, that's good.
And that's what I think people didn't get with this movie. They were more thinking about it in a very logical sense, like I was at the beginning. But life isn't that organized, you know?
Yeah, well, I think I thought of two things after we came out of that. Was that one was, okay, I think I know why people, like you're saying, why people don't get it is because you got Kirsten Dunst and you got Orlando Bloom. It's like you're expecting all these things to happen between these characters. It's about these two, probably.
Yeah.
And what's all this other stuff getting in the way, right?
Right.
The only other thing that I had trouble with, even though I really enjoyed it, was the road trip piece.
It seemed awkward.
It was awkward. It wasn't like other movies where there's road trips going on. And I thought, how come we're not spending more time with this? Like,
it just sort of happened and it was done.
It was done. And I remember we talked about that right after the
yeah.
movie, and I was like, that was the one part I was like, oh, well, maybe they should have explored that more or interwoven it somehow into
right.
it. But I was just left struck by Kirsten Dunst overall. Like
yes.
like you said, Orlando
yeah.
Bloom, I was kind of like, can't say anything good, can't say anything bad, he's a good-looking man.
Right.
But I was totally drawn to her in this movie,
yeah.
and drawn to the way that Cameron Crowe, like, just assembled, or maybe it was the way it was edited, like, the way he assembled the scenes together,
Right.
It got you thinking. I like movies that kind of get you thinking, as long as I can sort of understand it, you know.
Right.
That was my take.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you saw it again. I can't wait to see it again. I should actually own it. I don't have it myself. But great movie for those of you out there who haven't seen it. Give it a shot.
So that was my number three, The Revelation About Elizabethtown.
That's a good title. Or something like that. Revelation of whatever. I like that. You should use that.